Hello, everyone!
Hello!
Welcome to CawaiiCast.
I'm Candace.
I'm Tyler. And this is your Animu news.
Yeah, let's get straight to the news. We'll just get through it.
As you probably already know, the Urusei Yatsura anime is being remade. They have revealed that the first season is going to be a half-year run without breaks. So, like, 26 episodes.
Oh, okay. I was, like, trying to calculate, like, what do they mean, no breaks?
Yeah.
Every single day, a new episode. The animators are working on it constantly as it's airing.
183 episodes. Oh, yeah, baby.
They didn't say we could, they said we were crazy for trying to live stream an animation.
Very few cartoons are produced live. It puts a tremendous strain on the animators' wrists. Yeah. Oh, boy. Do you have anything?
I have the most obvious thing that has come out this week. That's why I didn't even bother looking it up. Netflix has announced the director and the cast for their live-action Yu Yu Hakusho adaptation. I have mixed feelings. I think appearance-wise, the costumes don't look great, honestly. But the actors they have chosen are all really good actors. And the director they've chosen is a really good director, has a really good track record. I think this has a lot of potential. I know a lot of people are, like, upset about the name changes, but actually these aren't officially name changes. It's just when the series dubbed in the Philippines, they originally had all of their names changed in the dub. So in order to keep true to the Filipino fans, the name changes are going along with it for that region.
But, okay, that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, but they will have the original character names in every other region. It's just the Philippines that's getting the name changes.
Man, Philippines don't get anything fun. Weird name changes. Right. Even, I think, One Piece, all of their censorship, like Zoro wields baseball bats or something. Poor Philippines.
Yeah, so the names are, like, really weird, too. Like, I think Kurama's name is, like, Dennis.
Dennis, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's just awkward.
Yeah, which, I swear to God, the first thing I can think of, I can't think of what show it's from, but it's from a Pro ZD skit, where it's just like, when video games give you the option to use your own name for the character, and it's just like, I, King Draken, will destroy you, Dennis. That's me.
Hey, what's up? Yeah.
That's all I can think of when I hear the name Dennis. It's just that one Pro ZD skit.
Sounds about right. And then in other news, what's it called? The lo-fi hip-hop beats girl on YouTube was flagged for a copyright issue. It was a false claim, really.
Mm-hmm.
But like that, the video was like taken down for a while.
She's finally done studying.
YouTube has since apologized and allowed the video to go back.
Okay.
So
she missed the exam that she was studying for.
Right.
By several years.
Fucking YouTube. So, I just thought that was amusing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all I have, because, like, the Yu Yu Hakusho thing's really the biggest thing that everybody's talking about right now.
Yeah.
Nobody's happy about it, but people are, like, I think people are, like, okay with it. Some people, like, it feels like the most, like, positive review I've seen of it so far, the most positive reaction I've seen to it so far is people are like, guys, it might not be bad. So that's always a good sign.
Yeah.
I do feel like these stage plays already did a really, really good job. My biggest concern is how they're going to pace this show. But,
oh, well, you know, 3 episodes in, it's going to be the Dark Tournament.
I feel like that's what they're going for, actually. Well, I feel like it's going to rush pretty fast. But
yeah.
But yeah, if you guys do want a really good live-action adaptation, like I said, the stage plays were incredible. I do highly recommend them. But, yeah. I think it's one of those things that you just gotta remember, even if it's bad, it doesn't take away from how good the original show is.
Yeah.
Like, I think people need to understand that concept. And this does introduce a whole new generation to Yu Yu Hakusho.
No matter how bad it is, it'll never be The Last Airbender.
That movie didn't exist.
You're right, I'm sorry. What am I thinking? You know, fucking Mandela effect.
Yeah.
I guess.
I know, that was an animated show. What are you talking about? It had three or four amazing, I can't remember how many seasons it had, but they were all amazing. Somebody's got to tell me, though. Like, Ganon doesn't even know The Last Airbender. What kind of anime podcaster are they? Anyway, let's get into today's subject. Which is, we went to go see a movie.
We did.
Yeah, and it was basically...
It was in theaters.
It was basically a private screening.
I know, right? I guess that's what happens when you go, well, in our area, when you go not only on a Sunday, but at like 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it was an early bird special. It wasn't a genuinely hyped film, so I don't think it would have been full theater no matter what. And it was like a Sunday. It's also like, by the time this episode goes live, it's not going to be in theaters anymore.
Yeah.
So it was like the last week to see it too. So.
Well, no, isn't Friday the last day to see it?
No, I think Thursday is.
Oh, well then yes.
Yeah, because I think all the new movies come out Thursday night, so they're probably going to have that room booked for new movies.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense.
Anyway, the movie we went to go see is called The Deer King, which it is the premiere debut film from... I literally had it pulled up and then it like went away. Hold on.
See, that's why you never close your tabs. Yeah. 67 tabs all the time.
It literally disappeared off me. I'm sorry, you guys.
Oh.
But it is the debut film from the director, Masashi Ando. Who, if you guys don't know who that is, don't feel bad, because like I said, this is his debut film as a director. But he was the lead animation director for Princess Mononoke. He also worked on Spirited Away, as well as several Satoshi Kon films. So he has a really good, like,
He's got the reputation. He just hasn't been, like, the head director.
Yeah, this is, like, his first independent project. I guess there was some conflicts with him at Ghibli Studios, so he left and then worked on other films under other prestigious animation directors, so.
Okay.
But yeah, this is his very first project, which is based off the book of the same name, which the writer, or the novelist of that book is Nohoko Uehashi.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You could definitely tell that the director for this had some Ghibli background, though, because this movie absolutely has Princess Mononoke vibes.
Oh, 100%.
Like, even just looking at the trailer, I was just like, this kind of looks like Princess Mononoke. And even, like, the hashtags for it on Twitter were just like, hashtag Princess Mononoke, hashtag Spirited Away. And for a while, I thought the G-Kids Twitter was just trying to use those hashtags to try to build up hype for the film. Because I'm like, what does this have to do with either of those? It's not a Studio Ghibli film. Now I know why, because he worked on both of those films.
Yeah.
So it's very, very obvious. You can tell just by the flow of the animation and a lot of the aesthetic.
So that being said, as Princess Mononoke being probably my favorite Ghibli film,
mm-hmm.
I did like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty good film.
Yeah.
It did also feel a little bit like Princess Mononoke light.
Yeah, it's like a store brand Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and quickly get into, like, the plot of this movie. Aside from the main character, so... I actually do want to look up the name of the two clans. I won't bother. So basically there's two clans that have been at conflict for each other for a bit. And
The Asshole Wolves and the Verts.
Yeah,
That's not the real names.
No.
But
Yeah, but these two clans were at conflict with each other until... Basically, a pandemic ended up putting a stop to the conflict because people were just dying from a disease. And the disease was called, like, the Black Wolf disease. They have another name for it in the show as well. It's way more Japanese, but the Black Wolf was kind of, like, the generic name for it. And after, like, the disease was basically cured and disappeared, the conflict kind of just ended. Like, they just...
It wasn't cured. It just kind of, like, died down. So one of the factions, the one that was basically attacking the other, who they were affected by the disease, and, you know, like, the natives were unaffected, and it basically got to a point where the attackers just kind of, like, gave up. They're like, okay, this isn't really worth it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gaining any ground here.
Yeah.
So they kind of entered a treaty.
Yeah, so they kind of... Yeah, it seems like the attackers, though, ended up with, like, the better end of the deal there by the end of it. Because even though there was somewhat peace between the two clans, the attacking clan kind of still treated the other clan like shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, the movie opens with a salt mine filled with criminals and slaves from basically the attacking clan. Like, most of the people down there were from the attacking clan. And so it does go to show that they at least, like, punish their own people instead of just taking people from the other side.
Yeah.
But within the salt mines, a bunch of black dogs end up attacking and end up spreading the disease to everybody, and basically everybody in the salt mine dies. Except for two people, a small child and a man, both of whom were from, like, the native clan. And a doctor arrives to examine the bodies and is basically just like, for some reason, the only people that are affected by this disease are the people from the attacking clan. And everybody's like, oh, that's because the disease is a curse that's, like, meant to wipe us out or whatever. And he's like, I'm a doctor. Diseases aren't racist. They're not going to discriminate against people. They attack everybody equally. There has to be something bigger going on. And then he finds out about the man who got bit by one of the dogs and still made it out alive with the child. And he's like, he could have the secret to how to survive this disease. And so he decides to go basically on a mission to try to find this guy, to try to cure the disease in order to save the emperor who has been affected by it, basically. The doctor is undeniably the best character in this movie.
Yeah, it's true.
But the guy who escaped with the child basically runs away to another clan, just, like, kind of outside, like, the main kingdom or whatever. And they're, like, a mix of, like, both people in this, like, little tribe.
Okay, so it's Aquafa.
Aquafa. Those are the people that are immune.
They're the immune ones. And Zol.
Zol are
the attackers. They're the ones that...
They're kind of the assholes.
Yeah, they're kind of the aggressors. They're the ones that... They're the empire trying to take over the land.
Yeah. And so, anyway, the Zol Emperor is sick, and the doctor's trying to find the Deer King, so that way he can figure out why he's immune to this disease, and that he could be the secret to curing everybody or finding a cure. And so the Deer King and the little girl end up going and living in a small village just outside the main empire that's mixed with both, like I said, both groups.
Both Zol and Aquafa.
Yeah. And they live pretty peacefully for a little while until a bunch of people show up to kill the Deer King because they know that the secret to curing the disease is in his blood, and they don't want the Zol to have the cure because making them sick with these dogs that are now infected by the disease is literally the only edge they have on them, and they want to destroy the Zol kingdom, basically, so they could be free.
Which is absolutely wild, because, like, these people that are conspiring to kill Vaughn are, like, the right-hand man of the Emperor.
Yeah.
That was, he was kind of put there as like a consolation prize for the treaty. Like, hey, look, I know we were attacking and everything, but hey, you can be my right-hand man, you know, so you can, you know, have some say in what goes on in the Empire.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, with the help of the doctor and a tracker, Vaughn decides to try to save his daughter from a village that has kidnapped her. And there's a lot of, like, story changes, like, as this movie just goes on. Like, every, like, 2 minutes, they're just like, we're changing the plot. But apparently, she was kidnapped because she is potentially the heir to the, Dog King?
Yeah.
Or the new Dog King? But also, Van could potentially be the new Dog King as well.
Yeah, since they were both bitten, you know, they're both immune to the disease. So they were just kind of like chosen or whatever.
Yeah, so they're potential chosen ones for basically the people that can control the wild dogs that are infected by this disease. It's a weird-paced movie. Like, they change the story kind of every couple minutes and just introduce new stuff to us, like, constantly. But the whole middle part of the movie is literally just them, like, traveling and talking.
Yeah. And like, I was telling you after we got out of the movie, like, that whole little section there really just kind of felt like Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
Where it was, like the doctor, you know, it was kind of narrating, you know, he's like, oh, and it was this situation that, where Vaughn had come to travel with someone who was trying to kill him, and, like, you know, whatever, goes on a little bit, and then there's, like, another narration, and it's like, doesn't feel like it quite fit.
My literal favorite line in the entire movie is during the doctor's narration, though. He's like, here I am, a certified doctor, eating parasite-ridden meat.
Right? like, dude, come on. It's cooked, for right? One. For two. Like, you were probably eating parasite-ridden meat before, anyways.
Damn it, Van, I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor, not a barbarian.
I only eat kelp. But yeah, like, we will spoil the ending of this, but basically the big mystery of the movie is, one, what is the dog god? Why is there a dog god?
What is the dog god?
And why are these people immune to the disease?
Okay, but like, that first scene where, like, at the end where you find out why they're immune to the disease, and then, like, that first scene, you know, that linked it to the end, I was sitting here thinking, like, boy, I bet you that's what the cure is gonna fucking be.
Right?
Like, it was not subtle.
Yeah, it was really easy to figure out the answer to why. Like, because it really doesn't, like, it's not, it really spells it out for you. It's just like, ah, yes, these children were not exposed to this exact thing. It's a mystery why they're sick. And I'm like, because they weren't exposed to the thing that's very obviously the cure. Like,
I know.
So, yeah. Oh, also, I forget what the deer are called.
Something.
Yeah. Pockies.
Yeah, something yeah. Like that.
But yeah, so there's lots of deer in this movie as well. That was actually how Van and the little girl found that, like, little village, is that they were breeding the deer because apparently selling just one of those deer back to the Emperor can, like, set you up for life.
Yeah, so they were trying to breed them to strike it rich.
Yeah, basically. Which I was, like, sitting there thinking about, I was just like, it seems like nobody in this movie knows how to tame these deer other than the main character, Van. So, what was their plan? like, here, have a wild deer. I'll take my fortune now.
Yeah.
Like, what are they buying the deer for? Are they planning on taming them? Do they know somebody who knows how to tame them? Are they planning on eating them? What was the goal here? Why are they giving up a fortune for a deer?
Yeah, I don't think it really quite explained what they were doing with the deer, aside from, we're selling them to the Empire.
Yeah.
You know?
So we'll get more into the deer later as well. But, yeah, like I said, the Doctor in this is really my favorite character in the movie. Not just because he's a pretty boy, but because I feel like he's just the best written character.
Like, he's great. Like, Vaughn, he's not a terrible character.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of... How do I explain it? He just kind of...
He's a bit one-note.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of personality.
Yeah, there's not a lot of conflict.
And I understand if it's like, if they were trying to go with the route of like, oh, he's like a very stoic character, and I think that was the route that they were trying to take,
mm-hmm.
but he comes off as like I said, he doesn't have really much of any personality.
Yeah, and then his surrogate daughter through the movie, I think her name is Yuna?
Yes.
Yeah. Girl is fucking scary.
Girl's creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Like all little girls are creepy as hell, but like...
She's like especially...
Whole nother level.
Yeah, like at first when they first introduced her, they really try to play up the whole like cute toddler thing. And I think by like... You know, instincts immediately. She's like, ugh, child.
push it away.
Yeah, like, drools. And then, like, as the movie goes on with, like, her being potentially the new dog god, I was just like, fucking creepy-ass child.
You're like, nope, not touching that with a 54-foot pole.
The only thing that's more difficult for me than being around a toddler is being around a toddler that's controlling a pack of wild dogs, alright?
Mm-hmm.
She had them creepy eyes. She had crazy
and
eyes.
And the boots with the fur.
Yeah, she was terrifying. Like, why did they make her so scary?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Some of the differences that really do set this apart from Princess Mononoke are really just the themes. The major themes in Princess Mononoke is that the whole conflict was supposed to be about how humans really care more about their own personal, like, issues than they do about, like, the world itself. Like, they just see land as something that they need to conquer and fight over, as opposed to land being something that belongs to the whole world, and the nature that lives there, and the spirits and all of that. So, like, the whole destroying the, like, the King of the Forest was... literally, like, an affront to nature and how humans just want to dominate everything, and that conflict and war is a very complicated issue that really can't be resolved by just who has the bigger gun or who has the better advantage. Being the victors of a war does not make you a good person, does not make you right, and doesn't make your cause righteous. And so Princess Mononoke uses really, really intense themes. And
I mean, it kind of does. I mean... What's the saying? The winners of wars write histories?
Yeah, history is written by the winners.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a quote from Hitler.
Terrible, yeah. But there is truth to it.
Yeah, but it doesn't make you the righteous part.
Doesn't necessarily, like, by our standards, doesn't make you right. But since you won, it kind of does...
You get to decide what's right and wrong because you're the victor, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mononoke had a lot of those themes to it, and ultimately that no matter who's the victor in the end, nature's gonna take itself back anyway. Like, at the end of the day, Mother Earth is the victor of all war.
Yeah.
So, Mononoke was very, very, like, spiritual and nature-themed, and yeah, it definitely introduced us more to both sides of the conflict as well, in a way that made the story a lot more interesting. This is just kind of like, both parties are kind of wrong, and we're just gonna put them in their get along shirt and hope it works out.
Yeah, cause you have the Aquafas that are like, yeah, we
kind of just getting revenge and not really caring about the consequences. They're even killing their own in order to say the ends justify the means, basically.
Yeah, and then you got the Zul that are like, Yeah, we're the Empire. We're going to take over.
They're also very, very religious zealots that refuse to understand how the world actually works, and they're very anti-science, and they're the only reason they're letting the Doctor do anything at this point is because he might cure their Emperor, and even then when he, like, says at this point we need to do something more intense than just herbs and medicine, then they're just like, no, you can't taint his soul. We would rather him die in his body and spare his soul, because they're very religious zealots.
He wasn't the Emperor. He was, what did they refer to him as? But he was, like, one of the higher-ups.
Yeah.
Like a lord of the land? I don't remember. But, like, yeah, he wasn't, like, the Emperor.
Yeah. But, yeah, he... Basically, this, like, the Zols are very, very much, like, we don't care about physical bodies. They die. They wither. We care more about people's souls. Like, that's what's important. You can't taint somebody's soul by saving their body. Stuff like that. Like, very, very anti-vax. And so ultimately, this movie's themes are more that you have to put your faith in science, and that ultimately you should trust people that have more knowledge than you. It is a very, very pro-vaccination movie. You could even argue that with the time period that it came out in, that it is almost a pro-vax propaganda film.
Yeah.
So... That's ultimately the key difference between the two movies, is just one is more about understanding nature and knowing that Mother Earth will always take its land back, and the other is very, very, like, get your vaccines, kids.
Yeah.
Go science. But yeah, with that, I think we can go ahead and spoil, like, the major ending of this film, because... Yeah. So
the first scene, like I said, that we figure out, oh, this is the cure, is really very quite obvious, because Vaughn is, like, going through the woods, you know, and he comes to a patch of, like, this, it looks like grass, but it's a certain plant.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah, oh, there it is.
That's, like, the deer's favorite food.
You know, and he goes and he starts harvesting it, and... then Yuna just kind of, like, pops up out of nowhere, and she's like, they're so pretty!
Yeah.
They're you know, like...
they're,
like,
glowing!
Yeah, so it's like, okay, well...
Danny!
There we go, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it goes back to them in the village, and you see, like, all of the deer are eating this plant.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's the connection of, like, Yuna milking one of the deer and drinking the milk...
And then she offers the milk. And then
she offers it to one of the Zol.
The Zol women.
And she's like, oh, honey, no, we don't drink that. We believe drinking the milk of a beast will turn us into beasts ourselves.
Yeah, so we find out the Zols are very, very anti-milk. And anti, like, drinking or eating anything that comes from an animal, like an animal byproduct. And so then later, when they're in the horse village or whatever, they find a bunch of children that are part of, like, the other clan, the ones that's supposed to be immune.
They're a bunch of, like, we get to the Red Horse Village or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there are a bunch of, they are Aquafa children, but they were raised in a Zol city, so they were basically... raised by Zols under their beliefs, so they had never drank in the milk.
Yeah, they even very clearly specify, like, they have never drank in the milk before, so they don't like the taste of it.
They don't like the smell. They don't like it because of the smell.
Yeah, so
I think that was the first thing. It's like, oh, the smell is weird. They don't like it.
Yeah, so the fact that they went out of their way to specifically mention that these children have never drunk the milk, and now they're diseased, in spite of the fact that they're part of the clan that's supposed to be immune to the disease... It's like, okay, yeah, the milk is where people are getting the antibodies.
This is really obvious.
Yeah. And then later when they extract Van's blood, once again, Yuna's like, look, it's so pretty, which is just like the plant.
Yeah.
And so then he makes the connection. He's like, the deer eat the plants. And then they drink the milk from the deer. And they're immune to it. And the Zol don't drink the milk. That means the antibodies are coming from the milk. Which, I have a question. about this. So if the only thing that makes you a candidate to be the dog god is that you have to drink the milk and have been bitten by one of the dogs, then shouldn't there be more candidates for the dog god?
I don't know.
So the moral...
Well, the way it makes it seem is, like, the dogs don't attack the Aquafa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only attack the Zal, which we kind of see in the scene where Yuna is kidnapped. You know, because she kind of hops on one of the wolves and, you know, is riding him away. And since it's a mixed village, you know, one of the dogs sees one of the Zal and is about to attack him. You know, but Yuna's like, oh, wait, no, I know that person. She kind of, like, does a mind control bullshit thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then the dog's like, okay, fine, I guess I won't kill this one.
Yeah, but they attacked Yuna and Van when they were in the salt mines.
I don't know why they attacked Yuna, but Van, like, he literally reached out of the cage and, like, grabbed the wolf's muzzle, mm-hmm. and was, like, trying to fight it, so I can see why the wolf would bite him as, like, a retaliation thing.
I still feel like there should be more candidates for the dog god if all you have to do is get bit by a dog and drink milk. So the moral of the story, kids...
Drink your milk.
...is if you get bit by a dog, make sure you drink your milk so then you can control the dogs.
That's right.
Drinking milk makes you a god.
So,
dogs.
So here's the thing, is like...
If you don't want to get sick, drink the milk, and if you're lactose intolerant, get fucked.
Get fucked. That's right.
Or get vaccinated.
Or I mean, you know, like, you can do what every lactose intolerant person does anyways, like, drink it.
Eat cheese.
And then eat cheese, for one, but then also... Get sick, you know, 5 minutes later and go, worth it.
Just fart until everybody doesn't want to be around you anymore.
Yeah.
And just be like, bitch, I had cheese.
Exactly. So maybe the book explains it better, but like, yeah. in this movie, it does seem like it is, like, the disease is only transmitted through a wolf bite.
Yeah.
You know, because like, even the lead, the one leader who was like, oh, I won't let my soul be tainted by blood of another, you know, mm-hmm. even he, like, had a bite, you know, which is weird because, dude, you're really high up. Where was your entourage of bodyguards? How did you get bitten so easily?
He was petting a dog. That's how everybody gets bitten,
I guess.
He was petting some random dog, you know, he didn't know.
So maybe the book explains it better, or, you know, as in maybe it's not just a transmitted through a bite.
Yeah.
Maybe it is transmitted in other ways.
Transmitted through the dog king. If the dog king bites you, you're fucked.
If the dog king bites you, does that make you the new dog king?
No, because you didn't drink the milk. You gotta drink the milk and give him my dog.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying, is like, if the disease is only transmitted through bites, why is this doctor so obsessed with finding the cure? You know?
Yeah.
Because you can kind
it's not
of
airborne.
It's traceable, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't just...
Because it seems like nobody can really stop these dogs. Like, the dogs just show up wherever they want, just bite people.
That is true.
Like, there doesn't seem to be a good defense against these dogs. So it's just easier to cure themselves of the dog disease than it is to...
I guess.
...actually learn how to fight dogs.
But, I mean, look, if you're attacked by wolves, you're probably fucked and gonna die anyways, mm-hmm. so, like... The cure for the disease isn't really that big of a deal.
The cure for,
like,
the disease
you're gonna die of rabies, okay, dude? Fuck off.
The cure for the disease is just to die. But yeah, like I said, the moral of the story is drink your milks and get your vaccines.
Yeah.
It's very pro-science, very pro-vaccine, and very pro-dairy. If you drink alternate milk, you're screwed.
Yep.
No almond milk in this village. You're gonna kill us all.
But I bet you could make milk out of that plant that does provide the antibodies.
That's true. An alternative milk that, yeah. Just no almond milk. You're gonna kill us all.
Exactly.
No nut milk. So, I think my really only issue with this film, one other than the pacing, like the whole middle of the film was very boring. But the pacing in this film really is the biggest issue. My other really big issue is that since it does feel kind of like a lighter version of Princess Mononoke, I was just sitting there thinking, like, really, who was this movie made for? Because I think for people who are Princess Mononoke fans, it's just going to make them want to go rewatch Princess Mononoke. And I think for people who aren't Princess Mononoke fans, I don't think this is going to be an appealing film for them either. So it's kind of like, who's really the audience for this movie?
And Americans. Anti-vax Americans.
Yeah. But then I was like thinking about it, and I kind of realized, like, this really was just a film for the director who made it. Like,
I think he had a lot of love for the book.
Yeah. I think he just read the book and he said, I want this to be a movie, and he had the skills to make a movie, so he made a movie. And it got me thinking a lot about the fact that, like, we're content creators, kinda. When we started this podcast, we weren't going into it with this idea of we're gonna have thousands of followers, and we're gonna have, like, all these subscribers, and everybody's gonna love our podcast. We're gonna be the new voice of anime, or whatever. Like, we never went into this with any kind of plan for monetization, or really having any kind of following.
Quick plug here, you can donate. No, I'm just kidding.
We made this podcast because we needed a creative outlet to talk about our feelings on anime, and at this point, we don't even know if we're reaching any kind of audience. Like, for all we know, we are literally just talking to an empty theater room.
Shout out to our 7 regular listeners.
Yeah, like, the fact that it was literally just the two of us in that theater alone, it really made me think, I'm like, that's kind of what I feel like our audience is for this podcast. It's just random people sitting there listening to us, not a lot, just a couple, who are just find us interesting or just want to support us in any way, and maybe our podcast, we could take time to polish it and make it better and make it something that we could probably monetize in the future, but that wasn't the point in us making it. And I think if we do decide to do something a little bit better in the future, that might be something we tackle someday, but for now, we're just talking because we want to talk. And if you guys want to listen, we appreciate you guys listening.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the feeling I get with this film, is I feel like he wanted to make a movie because he liked the story and he had the ability to make a movie. And if you want to watch his movie, then he'll be happy for your support. And if you don't want to watch the movie, that's fine as well, because he made a movie.
Yeah.
He made something that he could be happy with. And maybe in the future, he will continue to make movies that are a bit more polished and a bit more popular and things that more people want to watch. But
That being said, I don't know how well this movie has done.
Yeah.
But I do hope it does decently.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it to be like a huge flop, you know.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I did enjoy it.
Yeah. It was okay.
It just,
I don't regret buying the tickets.
Yeah.
That's, I just don't think this is going to be a super appealing movie for a lot of people, but at the end of the day, if the director's happy with what he made and his team is happy with what they made, that's what's important. And yeah. I hope he continues to make things that he likes.
Yeah. I would like to see where he goes from here.
Yeah. I mean, Makoto Shinkai and Hayao Miyazaki didn't start off super amazing either. They made things that they liked, and then eventually they found their footing and made things that other people liked too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I hope he continues to make things that he likes. And we'll continue to make things that we like, too. Because we like this podcast, and we hope you guys like it, too. So,
yep.
Creators should support each other, not tear each other down.
Exactly.
So, with that, want to thank you guys for listening.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.